This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
China feels pain at the pump.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. As of today, many Chinese citizens are paying more for their gasoline and diesel. The government raised the base price of fuel by 16% to 18%, the first price hike in 7 months. China provides fuel subsidies to its citizens, who have vaulted to the second largest oil consumers behind the U.S. Reporter Bill Marcus is with us from Shanghai. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tess.
So this is the first price hike since November. Even though world oil prices are up, 45%, what has sparked the change right now?
The supply of diesel has been very tight, and it was projected to get tighter as the summer went on. But the global prices continue to skyrocket, so there was a disincentive to refine and sell diesel. This price hike is going to give Chinese refiners an incentive to increase supply.
How are citizens reacting? What are they saying about how this is going to affect their money situation? Is it comparable in any way to what we're seeing here in the U.S., where people are almost running away from their cars?
In the sense that people in China are just like people in the United States who drive cars and don't like the price hikes, exactly the same.
Yeah.
But in the sense that most of China has never been in a car, let alone owned one, or had to suffer the indignities of filling one up at $4 a gallon, or here it's $3.40 a gallon, It's much, much different. Today I dropped by a gas station in Shanghai, and there I met a woman, Eve Jing. She runs a plant and flower nursery, and she drives a red Ford Focus.
So I was thinking about whether I will drive every day, so maybe we'll decrease the times of driving.
She says that the 18% gas hike means that she's going to spend more time on crowded subways. I also spoke with a gentleman who manages an import-export company, and he told me that because of the gas hike, he can raise prices this year, but not as fast as the gasoline price is going up.
What kind of concerns are there about inflation with this price hike? Because that's been something that the government has been really watching.
Well, this tariff on gasoline is going to go up 18%, but the electricity tariff, which is part of the package, is aimed at the industry, at producers. It's not aimed at residential owners. So the psychological impact is going to be very minimal. And the vulnerable groups like farmers, fishermen, taxi drivers are still going to be subsidized. And the people in the earthquake-hit area or Xinjiang, they're not going to be hit with this tariff increase either. So even though there will be a hit passed along possibly in terms of higher food prices, people that have to buy food because the diesel prices of truckers go up a little bit, it's not going to be so hard.
Reporter Bill Marcus joining us from Shanghai. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tess.
So China announced that hike yesterday, and the price of oil dropped almost $5 a barrel, sending U.S. stocks up for the day. Different story so far this morning. Oil's heading back up and stocks back down. All kinds of speculation going on this hour about Merrill Lynch and rumors of more write-downs in the offering. The Dow now back down below to the 12,000 mark, 128 points, just over 1%. The Nasdaq down 28 points, and the S&P is down 13 points. By the way, today is what's known as a quadruple, witching day on Wall Street. Bunch of options and futures expiring. Happens once a quarter and usually makes for a pretty volatile day on the markets. Don't get the wrong idea. Continental and United Airlines are not merging. No, they've reached an alliance. This way they will avoid regulatory scrutiny and, well, they had to do something. They're dealing with, wait for it, record fuel prices and a formidable competitor, Southwest Airlines. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
The flight attendants are casual, seats are unassigned, and the fuel that goes into its 737s costs less than what its competitors pay. Southwest has $5 billion worth of fuel hedges on the books. That means it negotiated a lower fee for a preset amount well before prices flew skyward. In the first quarter of this year, Southwest paid about $2 a gallon for jet fuel, while the market rate was at least a dollar higher. The fuel hedges won't last forever. But analyst Richard Abulafia with the Thiel Group says Southwest will still be flying higher than its rivals.
The fuel hedges are just the icing on the cake. Southwest has consistently kept its costs below any of its major competitors.
Some airlines may have to shrink routes this summer, but look for Southwest to announce new destinations. And unlike other airlines, you probably won't have to pay extra to take along a suitcase. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, June 20th. I'm Tess Vigeland. Today's high gas prices are forcing some heavy users of fuel to reconsider business as usual, among them school districts. Elisa Roth reports.
It's like having a snow day once a week. When students in rural Caldwell Parish, Louisiana, go back to school in September, they'll only have 4 days of classes. The district only has about 1,700 students, but they're scattered over a wide area, so the school buses drive more than 1,000 miles a day. John Sarton is superintendent of the district.
In figuring the amount of savings, not only from the fuel, but also from water and gas and electricity, we believe we would have a significant savings.
He thinks the district could save more than $100,000 a year. Caldwell joins a handful of other school districts around the country that have made similar calculations. Sarton promises quality won't be compromised. The 4 days will be longer and more compact, and the off days will be used for remedial classes and teacher training. Of course, working parents will be left to sort out childcare for the extra day, but the local library is hoping to help out. It's thinking about extending its summer children's program into the fall. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
It's been one day since federal prosecutors charged two former hedge fund managers at Bear Stearns with fraud. They're accused of deliberately keeping information from investors, information that could have saved them millions of dollars in the subprime meltdown. Ashley Maltaite has more.
Bear Stearns executives may not be the last to face criminal charges on subprime losses. Scott Myers heads the litigation group at Chicago law firm Levenfeld Perlstein.
There certainly are a number of other hedge funds that are in the mortgage-backed securities space. There are a number of other mortgage originators and loan processors, many of whom have Wall Street connections. So I would not be surprised to see additional prosecutions on Wall Street related to this issue.
But securities lawyer Chris Bebel isn't so sure.
The old saying is, indict in haste, repent at leisure. These are very complex, detailed cases.
Bebel says it could be very tough to convince a jury the Bear fund managers committed fraud. He says if the government does follow up soon with other indictments, it might regret it later. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
By the way, today's New York Times has some details of the Bear Stearns investigation. And guess what got those two hedge fund managers indicted? Yep. Emails. Guess they missed that whole Enron WorldCom Credit Suisse lesson. A former employee of Swiss banking giant UBS says he will tell U.S. tax investigators everything he knows about the bank. Bradley Birkenfeld pleaded guilty to a charge of helping a UBS client dodge U.S. taxes. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard has that story.
Birkenfeld admits that he helped wealthy clients hide cash and other valuables from the U.S. tax man. On one occasion, he smuggled diamonds into America in a toothpaste tube. He set up sham companies in places like Panama and Liechtenstein. Birkenfeld is due to be sentenced in August. His lawyer says he will reveal all about what was going on at UBS. Switzerland's largest bank is clearly reeling. In a statement, it says it is also cooperating fully with the U.S. Edward Haddas is with the financial website Breaking Views.
What they haven't said is perhaps more interesting. They haven't accused Birkenfeld of being a rogue trader or denied that some of these practices took place.
Haddas says that UBS may even be considering whether or not to disclose to the U.S. authorities some of the names of its 20,000 American clients. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And more fallout from the subprime mess. Washington Mutual says it will lay off 1,200 people in its home loan business. That's about 2.5% of its workforce. And on that jolly note, in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.
Bridges, roads, airports. Oh my, what's getting investors so excited about infrastructure?
It's not got technology risk. It's not got build-out risk. These are assets which are stable, proven, predictable, public benefit, essential service assets.
I'm Bob Moon, investing in America's building blocks. Next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.